So tonight, I'd like to talk about the first noble truth. And I think I probably will go into the rest of the noble truths in different talks, but I thought I'll start with the first one. And the Four Noble Truths is, yeah, a core teaching of the Buddha. So it's good to go over it and by dedicating a whole talk on the first one, going into a little bit more depth than maybe you're used to, or hopefully has something new too, because I think most of us know that the first noble truth is that there is dukkha, suffering, often translated as suffering. And then I'll also name the other noble truths. The second one is the cause of suffering, which is craving. And then the third noble truth is that there is also the end of suffering, which is awakening. And then the fourth noble truth is the path leading to the end of suffering, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. So to go into this first noble truth, I'd like to take a closer look at this word, dukkha, that is often translated as suffering. Because like with so many Pali words, this comes from the language Pali, it doesn't really capture the meaning of the word suffering. It's not really, yeah, it's not really so helpful. And the Buddha mentioned in the suttas that all of conditioned experience is dukkha. And then you can think like, oh, what about pleasant experiences? Like, because all of conditioned experience is basically everything that we experience except for nibbana, except for awakening. That's the only unconditioned thing. So everything that we normally experience is dukkha, says the Buddha. So what about all these experiences, like, you know, some peace that we experience during the meditation, or maybe love for our loved ones? You know, this feeling can feel really good and it's also very wholesome. And it's not really suffering. But still, the Buddha says this is a form of dukkha. And the etymology of dukkha is that the du part means bad or difficult, and the ka part means empty. And there's a specific meaning referred to ka, which is and the empty X hole of a wheel. And if the X hole is empty, then we have a really bumpy ride. So this might be analogous to our ride in samsara, right, in this world, like this endless cycle of birth and death is kind of a bumpy ride. And so there some scholars suggest different translations of dukkha, and some of those suggestions are, for example, unsatisfying, unsatisfactoriness, or unreliable, or stressful. Stanisarobiko says stressful. And that might help us to better understand this phrase that all conditioned experiences are dukkha, because in a way they're all unreliable and unsatisfying. Even pleasant experiences and wholesome, the most wholesome blissful states, don't give us any lasting happiness. And when we feel this joy or tranquility in our meditation, it's not lasting. And even like, you know, we love our, you know, partner or our child or our friend, but like there's this moment of love that we feel, and then we get caught up maybe in something else. Let's say, so another extreme would be we get caught up in anger for our coworker. So then at that moment we don't experience that love. So we go from moment to moment to moment experiencing different things. So it's not that we stop loving our near ones, but it's more that the moment to moment experience is unreliable and changing. So we can't really abide in none of these all the time. And in the there's the sutta, the setting in motion, the wheel of the Dhamma Sutta, which often is said that it's the first sutta the Buddha gave, but I think scholars are not really sure about that. But there he gives a description of each of the noble truths. And for the first one, he says, this is the noble truth of dukkha. I'm using dukkha here because of the translation problems and not suffering. So this is the noble truth of dukkha. Rebirth is dukkha. Old age is dukkha. Illness is dukkha. Death is dukkha. Association with the disliked is dukkha. Separation from the liked is dukkha. Not getting what you wish for is dukkha. In brief, the five grasping aggregates are dukkha. So this is how we often experience dukkha, right? This old age, illness, death, you know, to begin with. So kind of obvious ways of dukkha. And also experiencing things that we don't like, or that things that we do like that they end. Or that we just don't get what we want. That also is dukkha. So these we all experience every day. Like, you know, it starts to rain and we think that was such a nice sunny day. Or, you know, if you don't like your job and the weekend ends, then, you know, you have to get back to work. And so separation from what we like. You know, not getting what we want, not getting that promotion. Whatever it is. And then he ends with that the five aggregates of grasping are dukkha as well, the five khandhas, khandha in Pali. And those are five aspects that describe our kind of a full human experience. So the five are form, feeling tone, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. So those five aggregates are a very deep topic that I can probably spend several topics or talks on as well. So I won't go into that aspect right now, but it's kind of ingrained in what I'll be saying, but it's I won't be going into it in any depth. And then one interesting thing about what he's saying is that it's the five aggregates of clinging, and that what we cling to, that we're attached to, that's what we suffer about. And that's part of the second noble truth, that craving and clinging is the source of our suffering, of our dukkha. So this first noble truth is actually kind of a pragmatic, the Buddha kind of pragmatically calls out this truth, like, yeah, there is dukkha in our life, there is this unsatisfactoriness. And I don't think that he meant for us to get depressed over that. It's more to kind of see this as a truth, like to open our eyes. Yes, there is this unsatisfactoriness in our lives. And then, you know, be aware of this aspect of our experience as well. Since we all kind of have this mechanism to look for, you know, to actually search out these pleasurable experiences and avoid the unpleasant ones. That's kind of what we are wired to do. But through our meditation practice, we can see that this pleasure is not the end goal in life, even though it can be, you know, a huge support on our path. It's not to dismiss it, but to kind of, you know, honestly see that it doesn't last and that craving the next and the next and the next pleasant things is not probably the way to lasting happiness. And when we start to become more equanimous around the pleasant experiences or the painful experiences, then we are becoming less swayed by this uncontrollable and ongoing waves of pleasure and pain in our lives. So seeing this honestly can help us to be more equanimous in our lives, all the pleasure and pain that is happening, all the unsatisfactoriness. And so we can still enjoy those pleasant experiences, and I totally recommend doing that because they are such a great aid on our path to liberation. And I know I've mentioned this before, but you know, if we don't pay attention to it and we only pay attention to the dukkha side of our lives, then we're really becoming out of balance and we're really skewed towards these depression-like experiences. And that's also not what the Buddha taught. So, and the Buddha gives a task for each noble truth. And for the first noble truth, the task is to understand it. So he kind of encourages us to fully understand dukkha. So let's see if we can maybe understand it a little bit better. And one way to look at it is that the Buddha mentions three types of dukkha. And that can maybe help us get a bit more insight into this topic. And the first type is what is called in Pali dukkha dukkha, so double dukkha dukkha. And that's the dukkha that arises out of unpleasantness. So unpleasant physical and mental experiences. So it's, for example, the dukkha arising from what the Buddha was saying, birth, aging, illness, and death. It is dukkha due to experiencing things that we don't want. So it's not about these experiences themselves, however. You know, aging or illness in itself is not dukkha. It's our aversion towards it that is the dukkha. So it's important to see that dukkha is not inherent in the experience, but it arises due to not wanting the experience. It arises due to our aversion and resistance towards these unpleasant things in our lives. And a way to work with this kind of dukkha is to, you know, simply be mindful of this response of aversion, of resistance to what is unpleasant. To look directly at it and open to it and learn from it when we do our mindfulness practice. I remember that I once was on a retreat. I don't remember if I already mentioned this, but there was some pain coming up and I was getting aversive towards the pain, like it was a headache, and I really aversive towards the headache. And my teacher, Sayadaw Tejaniya, encouraged me to watch the aversion and not like get caught up in the pain itself, but really look at the aversion. So I looked at the aversion towards the pain and really opening to it and really letting it be there. And this opening, and slowly through this opening to it, actually the pain started to transform into just sensation. Like it wasn't like real pain anymore, because the aversion was kind of dissolving. So it's a really cool exercise to try if you have some mild pain, you know, but really heavy pain, it might not work as well, but start with something mild. So mindfulness is a great tool in working with this type of dukkha of unpleasantness. And James Baldwin says, "Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's faced." So that's always the first thing we need to do, face it. And then our practice, if we face it, can give, you know, insights into all these experiences and how we respond in our conditioning. And then the second type of dukkha is called Viparinama dukkha. And this is the type of dukkha that comes with change, so impermanence. And so this type of dukkha is about like that even if we get what we want, so we experience something pleasant, experience happiness, pleasant experiences, then they will change at some point. And that's what this type of dukkha is about, this change of the pleasantness into something else, sometimes something unpleasant. So every moment keeps changing. And you know, there's no way we can count on that things stay the same. So these experiences cannot give us any lasting happiness, even the pleasant ones. And so here we get the sense of the unreliability again. The unreliability because of the impermanent nature of our reality. Suzuki Roshi says, everything is in flowing change. Nothing exists but momentarily in its present form and color. One thing flows into another and cannot be grasped. And so this change is one of the three characteristics of our existence, together with dukkha itself, and also anatta, not self. And so even if we try our best, you know, to grasp it, like Suzuki Roshi says, we can't really grasp it. It's just gonna change. And recognizing this change can actually, you know, be freeing. It's like clearly seeing what's actually here can also be freeing. And one way of it being feeling like it can be freeing is that it also is the case for unpleasant experience that they will change. So if we do experience the unpleasantness, we can know, this is also going to change. This is also impermanent. And many times in the suttas, it is mentioned that disciples awaken with an insight around impermanence, like an insight like, oh, everything is of the nature to arise and pass away. And that's their insight and that's their liberation. So it's very powerful to practice with impermanence, to meditate on it. And then the third type of dukkha, the last type, is sankhara dukkha. This is the dukkha of conditioned experience, and sometimes called all-pervasive dukkha. So all of our experience is conditioned, except Nibbana, like I said. And we are basically this continual process of conditioned experience happening. So, you know, we experience ourselves as a self experiencing stuff, but what is actually happening is just a continuing process of things happening, and those are conditioned. And this is also continuously changing. And that is also stressful. That is also dukkha. So our life, our experience is arising based on causes and condition. And there are so many different conditions needing to come together to create this moment. So there is this instability ingrained in the existence, like an insecurity. Nothing is stable or certain. Like each moment is different than the previous one. So it has similarities to the second type of dukkha, but this type of dukkha is different in the sense of that it can give rise to this pervasive low-grade anxiety. It's kind of this existential angst. That it's kind of a low-grade anxiety that even if we are happy, healthy, and at ease, then it can change any moment. And a key part of this type of dukkha is also that we realize that that this conditioned experience is outside of our control. And we keep thinking that we can somehow get control, or we can get our act together or something. You know, we can somehow make things work in our life. But then the next thing happens, and the next thing, and we are faced with this unreliability again. There's Bhikkhu Nyanananda, he says, when our hopes are shattered, we grieve and lament. To be able to accept the reality of the situation, we have to attune ourselves to the rhythm of nature. Whatever is of a nature to arise, all that is of a nature to cease. Things come our way only in transit, and so we have to let them go. One has to practice let-goism as a detached observer of an inevitable law of nature. Then things fade away into the nature of things. And so one of the ways to start working with this type of dukkha is to start letting go, like Bhikkhu Nyanananda says, letting goism, letting go. Letting go of the desire to control. And instead open into this uncertainty of life. Acknowledging that life is uncertain and it will change. And also being mindful of all the ways that that is difficult for us, all the ways that we are still attached, all the ways in which this uncertainty and worry and existential angst might come up for us. And investigating feelings and emotions around this. And Gloria Steinem, the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. So we'll have to go to this phase of being pissed off, or how I like to rephrase it, this phase of being uncomfortable. Phase of feeling this instability, uncomfortableness. And then ultimately we might understand this truth of this type of dukkha, the truth of conditioned experience. And then another way of this third type of dukkha that it is experienced or described is that there's this work that we need to do to simply stay alive, you know, to live our basic life. So we need to make sure we have shelter and medicine and food and, you know, that we brush our teeth and we take a shower and, you know, all these kind of things. These basic things that we all need in our lives. So taking care of all of those basic needs is also a part of this Sankhara dukkha, this third type of dukkha. And sometimes this can feel like a lot of work, just going about these basic needs, like, oh, now I need to brush my teeth again and again, and now we have to eat again and again. And sometimes, especially on retreats, you can start to feel this, like another meal and another meal, and we have to go again and again. So that's kind of the first noble truth. There is dukkha. And these three types of dukkha hopefully help us to understand dukkha a little better. The dukkha-dukkha, so the aversion towards the unpleasant experiences. And the viparinama-dukkha, the dukkha of change. Even if we experience pleasant experiences, they will change again. So this kind of change is focused on pleasant experience changing into unpleasant ones or neutral ones or other experiences. And then the sankhara-dukkha, the dukkha of conditioned experiences. The stress of not being able to control our conditioned experience, as well as the taking care of our just our basic needs. And I offered some ways of working with these types of dukkha, like mindfulness really being the central aspect of that. But the ultimate way of working with these types of dukkha is, of course, the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the fourth noble truth, to walk this path of the Noble Eightfold Path. And then hopefully, if I continue this as kind of a series, maybe we'll get to the Noble Eightfold Path and so forth. Before I end, I'd like to mention that often it's useful to turn towards dukkha, like I've been saying, like, oh, let's be mindful of it and see what happens, you know, face it. But, you know, there are times that it's better not, you know, to face it and better to maybe turn away from dukkha or difficulty. And that's when dukkha may get too much, like we might get overwhelmed with, you know, something happening and we feel overwhelmed with sadness or anger or powerlessness or, you know, some big emotion, and it's really hard to stay with it. And in those cases, you know, it might be better to divert our attention to something else for a while, so that we can first calm down a little bit before we start facing it, especially if it's, you know, not working, that, you know, if the facing it is not working for us. And sometimes, for example, body-based practice might be useful, like a breathing practice or a body scan, or connecting with the touch points of the body, where the body is touching the floor, for example, or where the hands are touching, or maybe our legs or the hands touching each other, that kind of thing. And sometimes even we might want to distract ourselves with a movie or reading a book or something that, you know, it's not a general way I would recommend to work with stuff, but just as it's something really difficult and we really need a break, you know, we can offer ourselves a break. So yeah, here we need some discernment on what is good and healthy in each moment for ourselves, and we often kind of know inside, you know, if we're escaping or that it's actually wholesome and works well to direct the attention somewhere else. And then maybe to end on a more positive note, like I alluded to before, you know, it's not all dukkha. So the path's not all about facing what's difficult. It's no, at least half of the path is about noticing wholesome states of mind and cultivating wholesome states of mind and growing them and enjoying them and soaking them in. And that's also part of the Noble Eightfold Path, actually, like the right effort part of the Noble Eightfold Path is about half about facing dukkha and half about cultivating and growing and establishing wholesome states of mind. So that's actually a really important part of the path, and it's something that really can support us also in the face of difficulty if we know how to tune into the wholesome parts of our lives. That can be really useful. I want to end with a quote from a Hopi elder. "No, the river has its destination. We must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, keep our eyes open and our heads above water."